Hey everybody, welcome to the PDX Beat Podcast, the culture show that keeps a finger on the pulse of all things Portland. I'm your host, Amado Lumba, and for this week's beat, I sat down with newly published local author Kate Court, and we chatted about her debut novel entitled Glass. But before I get going here, I just want to remind you to subscribe to the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher Radio if you hadn't already. And to please do me the additional favor of giving the show a 5-star rating and positive review, especially on iTunes. It helps to give the show much-needed visibility. And the more people can discover us, the more opportunities we have to share all the wonderful things that make Portland awesome. Thanks. And now, on to the show. Along with her husband and two kids, Kate has called Portland home for the past 4 years. But her Midwest roots influenced the backdrop of her first book. Set in Cleveland, Ohio in the late 1980s, Glass tells the story of a tormented man ruled by depression and addiction and haunted by his past. Before we dive further into the story, though, I asked Kate to share a little bit about when she was bitten by the writing bug.
It was kind of later in terms of, I know a lot of writers that, you know, always had sort of a drive to write. I was always a big reader, but not necessarily a writer. And I took a creative writing class in college where it was very open-ended and there was so much room for creativity that I really got into it. And I was like, this is something I really like. And one of the short stories I wrote for that class turned into this novel, Glass. So it started as a really small idea, and then after I graduated, I kind of kept thinking about it and decided to expand it. This is really the first thing I've really written,
right?
Seriously.
What was the process like?
It was really intense, because I kind of found out that I don't like to write a little bit every day. If I have the motivation, I do it for many, many hours a day until it's done. And so I wrote for, you know, good 8 hours a day. I was just graduated, and so I hadn't started work yet. And I was like, okay, I have the motivation. I have some time. I'm just going to see where it goes. And after about 3 months, it was full length, but definitely not polished or anything. So then the revising process was a lot of, you know, little chunks of writing just to fix things and delete and kind of make it more of a finished product. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely the finesse part. But in terms of writing it, it was just kind of a big bulldozer move.
Kind of like a free association almost?
Yeah, it just kind of see where it goes. And,
yeah,
and you don't really know where that'll be.
So what was the research like? Because you tackled a pretty intense topic,
mm-hmm,
without giving too much away. But, I mean, really, I think for the most part, it's about mental illness.
Right, exactly.
What was the research like for that?
I really didn't do a lot of outside research. And even though the characters are very made up, they're very far removed from you know, who I am. But hopefully.
That's good.
Hopefully. But a lot of the issues, I mean, I've kind of struggled with anxiety and depression personally. There's a lot of addiction in my family, so I've seen a lot and experienced a lot that I could draw from. And then from there, I was just interested in crafting this kind of odd story that really just came out of my head. And where I really needed the research was the Vietnam section, because that's where I had no idea. I had a lot of interest, but nothing to draw from. So that's where I really kind of focused on outside sources, and that was pretty interesting.
Let's talk about your main character.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but it's Menashe.
Yeah.
Oh wow, nice. I think I started pronouncing it as Menashe.
Okay.
Until you, I think you included the pronunciation guide.
Because I was worried that maybe it wouldn't be a well-known name, and then I also gave him the nickname.
Yes, Ash. So that helps. But first of all, why that name?
Well, I really like that name. I wanted it to be unusual. I wanted it to be something that sticks in your mind when you're reading. I liked it because I wanted it to be something that had a clear nickname to show that maybe, okay, his parents gave him this name, this kind of traditional Jewish name. He has really drifted away from that past. And so to show him kind of pulling away, he accepts this really kind of generic nickname, Ash. And so I kind of like that symbolism. You know, he wants to distance himself from where he came from. And the name itself means causing to forget, which I kind of like. That's kind of his whole thing. He's trying to forget a lot about his past and a lot about mistakes he's made. So that I felt there are a few reasons that just really made it feel like it was a good name for who he is.
So who is Menashe in your life? Just kidding.
No, he's really probably the most made up out of any of them. But yeah, that's where I have the most fun writing, is just creating these people and just seeing where they go. And
yeah,
I don't necessarily know where that is.
I like how he's definitely not a one-sided character.
Menashe sat in his office, watching Magnum PI on his tiny television set, when a strong knock on his front door caused him to jump. It was Tuesday night, and no one was scheduled to come in. He frowned and switched off the set, walking cautiously to the door, with the names of potential visitors running through his head. Since it was dark and his apartment had no outdoor lighting, he couldn't tell who it was by looking out the peephole, so he called out, "Who is it?" "A friend of a friend," the person called back. "Who?" "Can you just open the door? It's cold." Something strange was going on, but curiosity got the better of him, and he opened the door anyway. "Can I help you?" Menashe asked the stranger, leaning against his iron railing, smoking a cigarette. "You bet," he replied with a smile. The guy flicked away his cigarette and walked up to the doorway. He was young and good-looking, with lustrous black hair, clear, dark skin, and thick eyelashes. He wore what looked to Menashe like very expensive clothes. Pristine brown leather shoes, dark jeans, and a tan sweater over a white Oxford shirt. He shoved his hands into the pockets of his gray wool coat. "Can I come in?" "Who are you?" Instead of responding, he pulled one of Menashe's cards out of his pocket and handed it to him. Someone had written, "Velvet Dog," on the back. "This is you, right?" "Who gave this to you?" Menashe asked sharply. "Listen, it's really cold. Will you let me in?" Menashe led the stranger down the hall to his office, unsure of what to expect from him. With his youthful cockiness and obvious wealth, he didn't fit the general description of a potential client, but he had a card, and Menashe was pretty careful about that. "So, what can I help you with?" he asked, sitting down behind his desk. "I want an appointment," he replied plainly, "to use the museum."
How did you come up with this character?
That's a good question. It kind of came little by little as I was writing him. I knew I wanted someone who was struggling with addiction, but was also a really good-hearted person, because you get an image in your mind of, say, an alcoholic, and it's usually not a great image. But then, you know, through his flashbacks, we see he was a really good father, and he was, you know, just really tried his best. And so I knew I wanted someone who struggled with his heart, with who he wanted to be, and then with these demons he was struggling with. And so I liked to use that as he starts this business to trying to help people, but then there's also kind of a more selfish motivation to maybe atone for things in his past. So I knew I definitely wanted it to be a lot of duality, a lot of struggle, and kind of keep you not really sure. Should I be rooting for this guy? Is he bad news? Or that kind of thing.
I really like the way you describe the Menashe's residence under the club.
Mm-hmm.
I could clearly picture in my head how that apartment looks.
Yeah.
So kudos to you on that.
Thank you.
And probably because I have a dark personality as well, that I can probably see myself living in that. What drew you to that environment for your character?
Well, I knew just from, you know, Menashe's personality, especially at that point in his life, when he would be looking for that apartment, he'd want to be left alone. He'd want to be unnoticed. So underground, it's kind of perfect, and it's a good kind of symbol for him. And also being below the nightclub, we know for what he does, he's going to need some noise cover to keep it secret.
Sure.
So that just kind of worked out. I'm glad it worked out in the book too.
Menashe was wrestling with his key, trying to force it into the rusted lock on his apartment door when he heard footsteps behind him. Chase, what does he want? He was coming down the iron steps, sweating, and lugging a briefcase, as he often did. Gotta get your new deadbolt for that door, he said apologetically. It's really gone to hell. There's just a trick to it sometimes, Menashe replied, using his pocket knife to scrape away some of the rust. He shoved the key inside and successfully opened the door. So, what can I do for you? He asked uneasily. Can I come in? Chase asked. This'll just take a second. Sure. Menashe reluctantly led the way, hoping all evidence of the museum was out of sight. Chase walked in, fanning himself as he leaned his bag against the wall. He was a big guy, average height but maybe 50 pounds overweight, and was always out of breath. He was wearing one of his usual club shirts, a term Menashe had coined in his mind, brightly colored, dressy collared shirts with a little sheen to them. That day, it was vivid green. Menashe liked Chase. He was genuinely kind and helpful, but it always made Menashe nervous to have him in the apartment. How's everything going here? Water still running? Yeah, thanks for taking care of that faucet. He led him back to the kitchen. Nothing else to report, I think. Good. They both sat down at the kitchen table, and Menashe got them some water. I wanted to ask you something. Oh, yeah? Menashe glanced towards the closed rooms of his museum. I feel kind of bad that we've never gotten to know each other. I mean, you've been renting from me for, what, 10 years? Menashe nodded. I've generally tried to leave you alone because you seem like a private person, and honestly, sometimes I forget you're down here. He chuckled and sat back in his chair, idly rubbing his neat blonde beard. Anyway, I wanted to know if you're interested in joining a poker game I started a few months ago. Just a couple of friends, really casual. We meet every other Sunday night upstairs, he motioned to the nightclub. The club's closed, so we've got the place to ourselves. He smiled warmly, but Menashe's head was starting to pound.
As you were developing the story,
mm-hmm.
as you mentioned, it took about 3 months of just writing. Were there any scenes that, you know, or subjects that did not make it onto the book that you felt a little bit regretful for?
You know, a lot didn't make it, but I don't regret any of it, because I think it really shows in that a lot of the scenes I cut, I can't even remember what happened. So that's how I know they really didn't need to be there. But I know I did have a lot of backstory at one point of Menashe's father, Louis, and his, you know, I went back into, like, his childhood and his adolescence, and I was like, I just didn't need to go that far, and it was kind of taking away from the main storyline and getting really convoluted. And so at the time I was pretty attached to it because it took a long time. I wrote many, many pages, but it was really kind of freeing knowing it didn't need to be there and that it would be better without it. And so yeah, some stuff got cut.
Okay.
Like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/thepdxbeat. Find us on Twitter as @thepdxbeat. Email us at thepdxbeat@gmail.com. And check out our website at www.thepdxbeat.com.
Are there any sections at all that, in hindsight, you should have expanded a little bit more on?
I really do like where it ended up. The last changes I made, my publisher suggested fleshing out John a little more. He didn't have really many scenes that he was a key player in, so two new scenes I added. One where Menasha first meets him in college, and then one at the very end that is John and Austin together. And so I think those really helped, because if he's going to be the best friend, you want to see him, you want to see who he is and get to know him a little better. So I was really happy with those, and those were at the end of the book, kind of putting it together.
Menasha looked up from his paperwork as John Cook stumbled into his office from the third room of the museum, breathing heavily. His light brown hair was pulled back into a ponytail, and beads of sweat glistened on his forehead. John sat down across from Menasha and brushed the accumulation of fine white powder off his shoulders. "How do you feel?" Menasha asked, setting aside his work and sliding his yellow legal pad in front of him. John leaned back, took the hand towel off Menasha's desk, and used it to wipe the sweat off his face. "I feel all right," he said, with a certain degree of surprise. "Better." "Do you want to talk today?" John hesitated. "We can wait if you're not ready." "No, it'd probably be good," he replied, and Menasha noticed a particular brightness in his eyes. "It's so weird," he added. "I really do feel better, lighter."
There is an inscription in your book, and it says, "For Tim, checkmate."
Cryptic, isn't it?
Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, well, after I graduated from college, I started going to this writing group in Kansas City, where after graduation, I got married, and my husband's from Kansas City, so we moved to Kansas City, and I didn't know anybody, and I really wanted to start revising and working on this book, and so I joined a writing group, and the founding member is Tim, and he and I have a pretty sarcastic relationship, and I was thinking I got to know him really well. He's one of my closest friends now, and I thought my publisher asked, okay, now you can choose, you know, acknowledgments and dedication, now it's for your book, and I was like, oh, who would I really dedicate something so dark to? You know, it's like, it kind of feels like sticking somebody with it, you know. I was like, I don't know if there's anyone I can really do that to. And then it's like, I can do that to Tim. And so I, and plus he really, without Tim, I would not have made this book what it is. I mean, for the first 6 weeks of the writing group, it was me and him. It was a slow point in the group, and nobody was really coming. And so he's like, you know, we can do this, just you and me. We'll bring pages every week and kind of go through it. And I mean, I got amazing feedback, and it was the best thing I could have done for this book, going to that group. And I just have really great memories. I made a lot of fun friends there, and it was just a really good time.
But what's with checkmate?
That was like, you know, it's yours. Okay. You got it. There's right. Nothing else you can do, because I have the final move.
This book, has it been released, or is it about to be released?
It has been.
Okay.
November 7th was when it went live on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and then its actual publication date was the 11th, which is Veterans Day. So that was kind of nice. That was my publisher's idea to give it a significant date. So yes, it is available.
Right on. And it's from Brickmantle Books.
Brickmantle Books, yep.
Out of Indiana.
Mm-hmm. And they also have a St. Louis office.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent. Kate Court, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Find out more information about Kate on her website at www.katekort.com and stalk her on Twitter at katecourt543. Catch her at the Camas Public Library on Tuesday, November 17th at 6:30 p.m. for a reading and book signing, and pick up a copy of her novel, Glass, available for purchase now on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and other book retailers. And that's our show this week, folks. Music in this episode courtesy of local musician Sweet Nothing, as well as a few Creative Commons licensed work. This has been a presentation of the PDX Beat. I'm Ahmad Olumba. Thanks for tuning in.